It's me again, Hank the Cow Dog. Do you remember Eddie the Raccoon? We called him Eddie the Rack for short. And he caused nothing but trouble from the first day he arrived on the ranch. He was an orphan, see? His ma got run over on the county road. Slim the cowboy found him up in a tree and took him home to raise. I knew that was a bad idea. I could have told him, but nobody asked my opinion. Who am I, after all? I'm merely the head of ranch security. The guy who runs this ranch day after day and night after night. The guy who puts his life on the line to protect it from monsters and so forth. And from coons, who are very destructive. If you want the inside story on coons, ask a head of ranch security. If it weren't for us, the coons would have taken over years ago. They would have stolen all the feed out of the feed barn, all the machines out of the machine shed, and all the corn out of the corn patch. Oh yes, and all the eggs out of the chicken house, but that happens to be a sensitive subject, and I'm not sure I want to talk about it. Yes, I'd had lots of experience in dealing with Eddie's kinfolks, and I knew for a fact that coons weren't nice guys. But what was I supposed to do when Slim brought Eddie home and decided to make a pet out of him? All at once, we had this little con artist on the place, and I had strict orders to be nice to him. Okay, so I went out of my way to be nice to him. And what did it get me? You'll see. But I'll give you a little hint. It was Eddie who led us to the haunted house, which happened to be full of... I don't want to scare anybody, so hang on. Maybe I shouldn't even mention it. It's too scary. Oh, maybe you can handle it. We'll give it a shot. It was full of black hooded hangmans. Pretty scary, huh? I warned you. Anyways, where were we? I guess it was in the winter, late January or early February. It was cold and snowy. Gloomy weather. Eddie had been living with us for several months, as I recall, and had broken all records for making mischief. See, he had a real talent for thinking up mischief and luring me into his schemes. Then, after the mischief was done, he would disappear, and guess who always got caught and blamed and yelled at and scolded? Me. Well, you can fool Hank the Cow Dog once in a row, but you can also fool him twice in a row if you're pretty clever, and sometimes even four or five times in a row. Maybe that's hard for you to believe, that a rinky-dink little raccoon could fool the head of ranch security many times in a row. I'm sorry to disappoint you, but he did. I admit it. But let me hasten to add that I had learned valuable lessons on the subject of coons. 1. Never believe anything a coon tells you. 2. Never take advice from one. 3. And above all, never ever help one escape from his cage in the middle of the night. Yes, I had been to school on coons, and the experience had made me a stronger, wiser, more mature dog. The chances that I would ever be fooled again by a raccoon had shrunk down to 0. Or below 0. All right, so it was a brittle, cold evening towards the end of January. Eddie the Rack was camped in his cage in front of the machine shed, as I recall, and he was asleep. Yes, of course he was, because that's typical coon behavior. They fall asleep around 6 o'clock in the evening, and then when everybody else is ready to hit the gunny sack, they're wide awake and ready to play. Eddie was racked out. A little play on words there. Get it? Eddie the Rack was racked out, which means asleep. Pretty good, huh? I get a kick out of... What was I talking about? Oh, yes, cornbread. Sally Mae had pitched out a few slices of week-old cornbread with the evening scraps. Drover and I raced for them, and naturally, I won. I won the cornbread and then proceeded to, well, choke and cough, if you must know the truth. Cornbread is very dry. Week-old cornbread is even drier than fresh. I woofed it down just as I might have gobbled meat or regular bread or any one of your other food groups. Woofing cornbread is a bad idea. Never woof cornbread. It's made of tiny particles, don't you see? And they are dry, and they can get caught in your... whatever. Your windbag, your breathing pore, the hole your air goes through when you take a breath. We call it the coffus magnus for reasons which are too complicated to explain. Oh, well, I'll try, even though it's very, very technical and scientific. See, in the security work, we have to use a lot of technical terms. Your ordinary dogs can't handle the big words and the huge concepts, so they rarely use them. Heads of ranch security, on the other hand... How did we get on the subject of cornbread? I thought we were discussing raccoons. Very strange. I mean, once I get locked in on a subject matter, I'm like a heat-seeking guided mistletoe. I go straight to the target and virtually destroy it in a blaze of wit and logic and so forth. And very seldom do I get distracted from my primary mission. Your ordinary run of mutts have a hard time finishing a sentence or completing a thought. Too many distractions. Drover is a perfect example. His mind is always wandering. To the clouds, to a butterfly, to a flea crawling around on his... You won't believe this, but at this very moment, I mean, even as we speak, a flea is crawling around on my... crawling up my left hind leg. It tickles. I mean, it really tickles. And if it weren't for iron discipline, I would probably... We're talking about serious tickles here, fellas, and I may have to break off in a minute and go to countermeasures. I'd rather not, because I want to finish the business about the cornbread. And once I've opened up a subject for discussion, I hate to... This is tough, but let me try to mush on. See, I gobbled down the cornbread, and I can't stand this anymore. I've got to do something about the stupid flea. Hang on. I'll be right back. Say goodbye to the flea, for he hath gone to the place where fleas go when they have messed around with the wrong dog. I hate fleas. Fleas and flies. They're worthless, and they drive me nuts. What good is a flea or a fly? What good is a fly or a flea? If you flick it a fly, it'll try to flee. If you flick it a flea, it'll try to fly, but won't. See, a fly can flee, because a fly can fly, because a fly has wings, and that is why a fly can flee as well as fly, but a flea can only try to fly, whatever. A flea can hop or hope to fly, a fly can fly or hope to hop, but neither can do them both at once, and I can't tell you why, don't you see? If a fly can fly and a flea can flee, you'd think that a flea could fly. Well, maybe it can, I'm getting confused, and who really cares? Not me. Goodbye. Pretty good, huh? I get a kick out of messing around with words and poetry and stuff, and you'll be proud to know that I got rid of the flea. Which brings us back to the important subject we were... What were we discussing? It just vanished. Had it right on the tip of my tongue, so to speak, but then... The sunset? Maybe that was it. We had a pretty sunset that evening. We have one every evening, but some are prettier than others. This one had lots of pink and orange in it, but that's not what we were talking about. Hang on, I'll get it here in a second. I hate it when this happens. Okay, I've got it now. Cornbread. Drover and I raced for the cornbread, and I won, little suspecting that it would come very near to choking me to death. I coughed and harked and wheezed, and finally managed to... Eddie the rack. Forget the stupid cornbread, also the fleas and flies. I don't know how you got me talking about those things anyway. Somehow you managed to distract me, and I wish you wouldn't do that. It makes me look silly, and nothing could be further from the truth. I'm not silly at all. I'm a very serious dog. That's why you rarely see me smiling, because I rarely smile, because life is very serious. And if life is very serious, what's left to smile about? Not much. You think about that whilst I try to get organized. Coming up, Eddie the Rack. Never mind the cornbread. Okay, here we go. It was a warm, lazy evening in August. Drover and I were down at the gas tanks, lounging on our gunny sack beds and more or less killing time. Hold on. It was a cold, brittle evening in February. Now we're cooking. Lounging and killing time aren't things I do very often. Drover does it all the time because, well, he's a fairly boring personality and more than slightly inclined to be lazy. Anyways, for a brief span of time, I found myself killing time. Or, to put it another way, I was catching a few moments of rest before darkness fell, and I had to go back out on night patrol. Drover had his ears folded back and was looking up at the clouds. I know it was foolish of me, but on a sudden impulse, I said, "A penny for your thoughts, Drover."
"Oh, it's fine. How's yours?"
"Pretty good. It's been better, but it's been worse." There was a moment of silence. "What are we talking about?" He gave me his usual blank stare.
"Your appendix."
"My appendix? Why would you ask about my appendix?"
"I don't know. You asked about mine, and I thought I'd be nice and ask about yours, and I did, and you said yours was pretty good. I'm glad it's better."
"Thanks. Yes, it's much better." There was another moment of silence. "When did I ask about your appendix?"
"Oh, I don't know. Sometime."
"Be more specific, please. Yesterday, today, tomorrow?" He twisted his head around and scowled.
"Well, it wasn't tomorrow. And I don't think it was yesterday. And maybe it was today."
"All right, now we're getting somewhere. Let's see if we can narrow it down a little more. What time today?"
"Well, let's see. I don't remember."
"Drover."
"Let me think. Okay, I think I've got it now. It was just a little while ago."
"You mean this evening, just now?"
"Yep, I'm almost sure it was."
I shook my head. "Drover, what I said was a penny for your thoughts."
"I'll be darned. I thought you asked about my appendix."
"No, I did not ask about your appendix."
"I'll be darned. I guess I heard the penny part and thought it was appendix instead of penny."
"Yes, it certainly appears that's what you thought, but that's not what I said."
"I guess not."
"In the first place, I don't care about your appendix. In the second place, I'm not sure that dogs even have one. In the third place, you're wasting my valuable time."
"Sorry, I thought I had one."
"You don't have one."
"Then how come it hurts all the time?"
I glared at the runt. "If you don't have one, it can't hurt."
"No fooling. Gosh, I feel better already."
"Good. I'm feeling slightly insane."
"Of course, this old leg still gives me fits. Maybe it was the leg all the time."
"It's been a leg for years, Drover. The very same leg you've always had."
"I guess you're right. Gosh, I feel great, Hank. Thanks a million."
"Sometimes... oh, well." At that very moment, I was rescued from the swamp of Drover's mind by the slamming of the screen door up at the house. My ears shot up. My eyebrows shot up. My mouth began to water. New meaning surged into my life. I leaped to my feet. Drover had heard it too, and he leaped to his feet.
"Scraps!"
"Hey, Drover, a penny for your thoughts."
"A whole penny? Oh, boy. Well, let's see here."
I went streaking up to the yard gate and... was first in line for the alleged scraps. I wagged my tail and gave Sally Mae my most charming smile. Her gaze went past me.
"Where's Drover?"
"Who? Oh, him. How should I know? Goofing off somewhere, and he probably wasn't hungry anyway. I was pretty sure he wouldn't mind if I ate his share of the, scraps." She scraped the plate. And it's funny how the sound of that fork scraping over the plate causes my mouth to water. It also gives me a powerful urge to dive into the scraps and woof them down before they can dry up or get stale, so to speak. And I did dive into the scraps And I did woof. Cornbread. Dry cornbread. Were you aware that at certain stages of its growth and development, cornbread can be poisonous and very dangerous? It can be. I learned this through bitter experience when I came very close to strangulating right there in front of Sally Mae. You know what she said? She said, and this is a direct quote, she said,
"Well, Mr. Greedy MacPig, if you'd chew your food instead of gulping it down, maybe you wouldn't strangle yourself."
It had nothing to do with gulping or being greedy. It was her cornbread recipe. I happen to know that you're supposed to put some kind of moisture in the cornbread. Milk, egg, shortening, stuff like that. I mean, nobody can eat cornbread that's as dry as something. Horse feed, sand, sawdust. No wonder she threw it out. It would have choked her horse. It's just a shame that she didn't label it for what it was. Poisonous and toxic material. Suppose I had choked to death right then forever. Imagine the terrible guilt she would have felt, and I mean for the rest of her life. Terrible burden. One of the sad facts that we dogs must live with is that our human friends will slip us any kind of rubbish and garbage. I mean, they mess up the recipe and come up with something they can't chew and they can't swallow and they can't stand to keep in their mouths. And what do they do with it? Give it to the dogs. Right. As always, spend the whole day just waiting for the next batch of burned toast, incinerated cookies, moldy ham, and sawdust cornbread. And they actually expect us to eat the stuff. The strange part of all this is that we usually do, which makes you wonder. That's about all the time we have to spend on toxic sawdust cornbread. The important point to remember is that I survived the ordeal, no thanks to Sally Mae, and became a much wiser dog. Just as I had passed through this dangerous spell of coughing and choking, Dover came padding up from the gas tanks.
"Hi, Hank. You owe me a penny."
"A penny for what?"
"You said you'd give me a penny for my thoughts."
"Oh, yes, so I did. Unfortunately, I had an emergency call and wasn't able to hear all of your thoughts. I'm sure I missed out on something very special."
"Oh, yeah, it was pretty exciting. I came up with three whole thoughts."
"No kidding. Do I dare ask what they were?"
"Oh, sure, I'd love to tell you. If I can remember. Gosh, I hope I haven't lost them."
"Yes, that would be a tragedy.
Let me see here."
He screwed his face into a knot and rolled his eyes around.
"Okay, here we go. Thought number one. No one knows more about being a fly than a fly."
I stared into the huge vacuum of his eyes. "That's a thought?"
"Yeah, you like it?"
It leaves me speechless, Drover.
"Gosh, thanks."
"What's the next one?"
"The next one. Let's see here. Thought number two. There's a pot of rainwater at the end of every rainbow."
"Uh-huh. Not bad. Let's move on to number three."
"Okay. Thought number three."
His eyes went blank, even more blank than they were before.
"Gosh, I can't remember. I've lost it."
"That's too bad, son. I was really looking forward to hearing it."
"Yeah, me too, because it was a wonderful thought, the best one I ever came up with."
"That's a real tragedy, Drover. But of course, I can't possibly pay you a penny for only two thoughts."
"Oh, darn. Now I'm really sad and upset. It almost breaks my heart, because I tried so hard and worked so hard."
Yes, I see what you mean. And what really makes it sad is that those may have been the only three thoughts you ever came up with in a single day. And I mean in your whole life.
Yeah.
He was almost in tears now.
They were my very best, and I was so proud of myself.
I patted the little mutt on the shoulder and tried to comfort him in his hour of greatest need. Drover, this is a very sad moment, and I feel that I should do something to reward you for your effort. You'll never guess what he got as his reward. Drover's eyes brightened, and a grin spread across his mouth.
Really? A reward? No fooling? Oh, that would be so kind.
Yes, well, there's more to me than steel and iron and steel, Drover.
You said steel twice.
Do you want a reward or not?
Sorry.
Never correct your superiors. Okay, here's my best offer. I can't give you a penny for two thoughts. I'm afraid it would corrupt you in small but insignificant ways. But to show you how proud I am, I'm going to give you the rest of the evening's scraps. His eyes went to the cornbread on the ground.
A cake of sawdust?
It's Sally Mae's cornbread, Drover, and I can't tell you how delicious it is. You may have the rest of it. Congratulations. I watched with great interest as he pounced upon the cornbread and woofed it down. He didn't choke. He didn't even cough, the little dunce. I couldn't believe it. He swallowed the last bite and gave me this big stupid grin.
Thanks, Hank. Cornbread beats a penny any day.
Shut up, Drover. You take a good idea and run it straight into the ground. Darkness had fallen, and it was time for me to begin my night patrol, which is one of my most important jobs on this outfit. Even though Drover had made a fool of himself by eating inedible food products, I decided to give him another chance. I assigned him the job of checking out the eastern quadrant of ranch headquarters. We divide up the headquarters area into five quadrants, don't you see? And the EQ, that's our code name for eastern quadrant, the EQ is the least likely of all of them to attract troublemakers. I gave Drover the EQ, and I took ATOQ. That's another code word, and maybe I shouldn't reveal what it means. There's some danger in revealing our codes. I'm sure you understand. See, if our codes fell into the wrong hands, there's no telling what might happen. But it would be serious. Very serious. I mean, the safety of our agents might be in jeopardy. There's nothing personal in this, so don't get your feelings hurt. I'm under strict orders not to reveal any more of our... Oh, what the heck? It probably won't hurt to declassify one little code word. But only on the condition that you promise never to blab these code words to a coon, coyote, skunk, badger, fiend, phantom, or monster. Promise? Okay. Make sure no one's looking. All set? And don't forget that you promised. Here we go.
The code decryption procedure will now begin. What you are about to witness here before your very eyes is the transmission of top secret, highly classified information in ultra crypto. Code. You should be warned that this information is so dreadfully secret that it sometimes causes diaper rash on exposed skin. It has also been linked to heartburn, celery wiltage, and certain forms of ringworm. You are urged to take all safety precautions. The code decryption program has begun. Decryption procedure in progress. Please hold.
Joe's Grill has the best burgers in town. Install safety devices now. Hi, we're away from the phone right now and disregard previous message. Prepare visual devices to see decrypted code. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, 2, 3. 17. 420 blackbirds baked in a pie.
Warning, disc full. Drive slow, old cats.
Have a good day, good day, good day, good day.
System failure.
Okay, we seem to be having a little trouble with data control. Those things happen every once in a while. Sorry, I guess we can't decode the secret message. I hate that. On the other hand, you suppose that we could do it manually? Why not? Hang on for a second. We'll switch everything over to manual. Here, here, and here. And we'll see if we can do the decoding by hand. I think this might work. Stand by. Okay, here we go. EQ is the code word for Eastern Quadrant. ATOQ is the code word for all the other quadrants. Hey, all right, we did it. Pretty good for a ranch dog, huh? You bet it is. Well, that was a lot of trouble, but it was worth it. It gives you a little glimpse into the shadowy world we inhabit in the security business. A world of spies, secrets, treachery, and high-tech adventure. Anyways, it was time for night patrol, and you now have enough information to know where I was going on this mission. I steamed down to the corrals, did a QVS of the feed barn, the sick pen, the saddle shed, the wire lot, and the saddle shed. Sorry, QVS means quick visual scan. More code. I know it's pretty complicated, but just bear with me. From there, I cut a 90, made a 90-degree turn, and proceeded on a new course, bearing 806-435-7611 degrees of lingerie, straight east. This took me past Emerald Pond, through the grove of elm trees, past the gas tanks, up the hill, through the snow, and up to the machine shed. The patrol had left me near exhaustion. I mean, you can't imagine the amount of energy it takes to remember all the procedures, go back and forth through our various codes, and maintain a high level of alertness. You probably thought a night patrol was a simple deal, the kind of thing any dog could do. Now you know the truth. Where was I? Oh yes, in front of the machine shed, exhausted but warmed by the inner warmth of warmness that comes when a guy knows that he's done his job and pulled the wrench through another dangerous night. I sat down in front of the overturned Ford hubcap, which serves as our dog bowl, and began crunching a few kernels of co-op dog food. It reminded me of sawdust. Sawdust in the cornbread recipe of certain parties that shall remain monopolous. Monominous. Unnamed. It reminded me of Sally Mae's cornbread. We might as well come out and say it. And that was no great compliment. Nevertheless, a dog has to eat something, so I crunched a few kernels and caught my breath and... Did you hear that? No, probably not, because you weren't there, but I heard it. A rattling sound, almost as though something were being rattled. But what could it be? Oh. My stomach was growling. Relax, no big... No, by George. There it was again. Yes, a rattling sound. Exactly the kind of sound you would expect to hear if something were being rattled. And it wasn't my stomach this time. Even though I was very tired from all the patrol work, even though I was ready to take it easy for a while, even though I had more or less lost my appetite for adventure, even though all the so forth, I found myself slipping into the alert and readiness procedure. My ears leaped up into maximum gathering mode. My tail froze and locked in at a 20-degree angle. I narrowed my eyes and switched over to infrared detection. I raised hackles and threw all the hair lift-up circuits over to automatic. I went straight to warning growls and kicked that whole circuit over into Data Control's master program. You probably think all of this took 30 minutes or even an hour. You'll be shocked to know that I flew through the whole checklist in a matter of seconds. That's right, mere seconds. We're talking about blazing speed, fellers. That's what it takes to be successful in my line of work. Pokey puppies need not apply for this job. Anyways, once I had reached full readiness mode, I knew that it was time to move out. I shifted into stealthy crouch mode and began creeping towards the rattling sound, which, by the way, was getting louder and scarier. As I drew closer to the mysterious sound, I knew that this was not a simple case of the wind rattling something. By this time, my instruments had detected a pattern to the sound, a pattern which indicated that this was not a random noise. It was being created by some type of intelligent life form, or worse yet, by some unknown night monster. Oftentimes, the early patterns we get on our instruments look about the same for life forms and monsters. Which is too bad, because if a guy was sure that he was picking up a night monster on instruments, he might choose to, adjust his strategy, so to speak. I crept forward on paws that made not even a whisper of sound. And then, holy smokes, all of a sudden... Okay, you can relax. We had us a little false alarm, is all. We get those every once in a while. It's no big deal. See, I had more or less forgotten that Eddie the Rack was in his cage near the machine shed doors. The sounds I had picked up on instruments were the sounds of Eddie rattling his cage. And let me emphasize that the sound patterns of a coon rattling his cage are almost identical to those created by unidentified night monsters. No kidding, virtually the same, and any dog might have mistaken one for the other. Which is not to say that I made a mistake. We'd just gotten some hazy patterns on our... I think you get the point. And it was Eddie the Rack. I greeted this discovery with mixed emotions. On the one hand, a guy can't be too sad about finding a pet coon instead of a night monster with flashing red eyes and blood dripping off his fangs. On the other hand, there wasn't much on the other hand, so why don't we just skip it? Finding Eddie the Rack was okay with me, even though I'd gone through all the readiness procedures. I wasn't exactly heartbroken. I took a deep breath, canceled all the RPs, and sat down. I noticed that my legs were trembling, mostly from excitement. Eddie was pacing around his cage in that peculiar monkey walk of his. As you may know, coons resemble monkeys when they walk because they move both legs on each side at the same time. Does that make sense? Maybe not, but they resemble monkeys. I watched him. He'd pace for a while, then stop and run his hands over the outline of the cage door. I could hear him muttering to himself.
Got to get out. Where's the door? Where's the lock? Somewhere. Maybe a hole. There's got to be a hole. Out. I've got to get out.
I had seen all this before, and I knew that it was just a part of Eddie's normal behavior. Around midnight, your average raccoon awakens from sleep and is seized by something called moonlight madness. If he happens to be in a cage, he will spend hours and hours pacing, rattling, probing, and muttering under his breath. This kind of behavior often produces a rattling sound, and as you can see, we had solved that part of the mystery. After observing Eddie for several minutes, I decided that I might as well reveal my presence. I stood up on all fours and cleared my throat. Ahem! Eddie froze and turned his beady little eyes in my direction.
Oh, hi.
How's it going, Eddie? You're staying busy, I guess.
Yeah, need to get out of here. Can't stand to be cooped up. Don't suppose you could help, could you?
Eddie, you know the answer to that. Guard dogs aren't allowed to help pet coons escape, period. We've been through this before.
Yeah, and you helped me before.
That was an isolated incident, pal. You conned me into letting you out once, and it'll never happen again.
Twice.
Okay, twice. You conned me twice, and that makes two good reasons why it'll never happen again. He went back to the business of pacing and probing the cage. I wandered over and watched. Eddie, why don't you just relax and enjoy yourself? They'll turn you loose one of these days, and then you'll have to make a living for yourself. You've got a pretty good deal here. Room and board and no heavy lifting. What's the problem?
Bored.
So take up singing, play checkers, learn some magic tricks. He stopped.
I do tricks.
No kidding, magic tricks?
Sure, wanna see?
Well, sure, why not, as long as they don't take much time. I'm still on night patrol, see? And I don't have much time for... You know some magic tricks, huh?
Yeah, come over here.
I went over to the spot directly in front of the cage door.
Sit down.
I sat down.
Watch this.
I watched. He reached one of his little hands into the feed bowl and pulled out a kernel of dog food. That's what they were feeding him, see? Dog food. Same stuff we ate. He pulled out one of the kernels and held it in the tips of his fingers.
What's in my hand?
A kernel of dog food.
Now you see it?
He brought his hands together, rubbed them around, and threw them out in front of him.
And now you don't.
I stared at his hands. They were open and empty. Huh. I'll be darned. How'd you do that?
Magic. Want me to bring it back?
Well, I guess so, sure.
Now it's gone.
He held out his hands and turned them up and down, then reached his left hand behind his left ear. He brought it forward and opened it.
Now it's back. Bingo.
Say, that's pretty slick, Eddie. I don't know how you did that, but I'll bet you can't do it again. I mean, you've got fast hands, but I don't think they're fast enough to fool me twice in a row. Don't forget who's in the security business around here.
Okay, you ready?
No, just a second. I moved closer to the cage so that I could study his every move. I knew he was using some kind of trickery, and I intended to catch him this time. Go for it! He held out his hand, palm side up. I studied it. Yes, there was a kernel of dog food in his palm.
Now you see it?
He brought his hands together, rubbed them around, and threw them into the air.
And now you don't.
Wait a minute. Let me take a good look at those hands. He presented his hands, open and palms up. By George, they were empty. No sign of the dog food kernel. He gave a squeaky little laugh.
Bet you can't guess where it is.
Sure I can. It's behind your left ear. You can't fool me, pal. I saw the whole thing. He bent down so that I could see behind his left ear and... You might say that it wasn't there, which kind of surprised me. He grinned.
Guess again?
I think not. Let's finish up the trick and go on to something else. Just show me where it is.
Can't.
What do you mean, can't? Did you lose it in the mist of the vapors?
No, it's outside the cage.
Outside the cage? I don't think so. No way, sorry.
Bet me?
Bet you? Well, Hey, Eddie, I believe my eyes and common sense, and both of them tell me...
Bet me?
Both of them tell me that, well, betting on duty is a violation of the cow dog code of conduct, don't you see? In other words, yes, I would love to take you up on your bet, but no, I'm afraid the regulations don't permit it.
Too bad.
but that doesn't mean you can't finish the trick. He shrugged.
Open the door. I'll finish the trick.
No problem there. I pawed at the latches. There were two of them, not just one, until I had them undone. Eddie took it from there, opened the door, and stepped outside. He took a deep breath of air, looked up at the stars, and said,
Oh, yes!
Wait a minute, pal. Whoa, hold it, halt! You'd better come up with a kernel of dog food pretty fast, or I'm liable to get suspicious.
Suspicious? Of me?
Right. I'm going to suspect that you pulled another cheap con game on me. And if I really thought that was true, Eddie, our friendship would be in trouble. Finish the trick.
Oh, gosh.
Or bad things will start to happen.
Oh, darn.
I stuck my nose in his face and gave him a growl. Why, you little fraud. I should have known what you were doing. It was just another con job, wasn't it, huh? Another sneaking, slimy little trick to get you out of the cage, right?
What's this?
Huh? What's what? He reached behind my left ear and held up a... You'll never guess what he held between two of his fingers. I mean, even I was surprised, although I had suspected all along that he could... that he might... He held up the missing dog food kernel, you might say.
Bingo. Good thing you didn't bet.
Yes, I see what you mean, but how did you do that?
Magic. Want it?
Before I could answer, he flipped the kernel up into the air, and more or less on instinct, I snapped and caught it. I chewed it up and swallowed it down, and by that time, Eddie was gone. I saw him monkey walking through the snow in the general direction of the chicken house. I had to run to catch up with him. Hey, wait a minute. Where do you think you're going? You're supposed to be back inside your cage.
No time for that. Got another deal for you.
What? Another? That's just what I needed. Another one of Eddie the Rack's deals. I had no idea what sort of deal he had in mind, but I was already starting to worry about it. I mean, the last couple of deals he'd pulled had gotten me into trouble, and it even made me look silly, if you can believe that. Anytime you've got a loose coon on the place, bad things start to happen. Yes, I was concerned, but what can you do about a loose coon? A loose coon is like a genie with light brown hair that has escaped from its bottle. Once the genie gets out, it's hard to put it back inside the toothpaste tube. The point is that I didn't have much control over Eddie once he'd gotten out of his cage. I could have barked and sounded a general alarm, but I didn't see any need for such drastic measures. Not yet, anyway. It appeared that my best course of action was to wait and watch and see what kind of mischief Eddie got into, and then remove myself from the scenery of the crime. Far, far away, so that I couldn't possibly be blamed for it. That was a good plan. Or it should have been. How was I supposed to know that he would go inside the chicken house? I never would have dreamed it. I mean, what a crazy thing to do. On our outfit, if a guy wanted to stir up some real serious heavy-duty trouble, all he had to do was mess around with Sally Mae's chickens. We're talking about a shooting offense, fellas. When it came to chickens and eggs, Sally Mae had no mercy and zero sense of humor. When I saw Eddie stick his head inside the door of the chicken house, the little door that the chickens use, not the big one, when I saw the so forth and realized what he had in mind, I tried to stop him. Say, Eddie, I don't think I'd... Eddie, you'd better stay... Hey, pal, you're fixing to get yourself into more trouble than you ever dreamed of. It was too late. He didn't hear me, or didn't listen, or didn't something, and in a flash he was gone, inside the forbidden place. Well, he'd really done it this time. All I could say was, bye-bye, Eddie. It was nice knowing you, because I wasn't about to set foot inside that place. No way. See, I'd been there before, and I'd gone to school, so to speak, on the subject of chickens. And I sure hated to think of poor little Eddie getting hauled up in front of the firing squad. But in the real world, we sometimes pay a terrible price for our mistakes. And that was too bad because... Well, Eddie was new to the place and didn't know all the rules. And he wasn't a bad guy, really, just a little on the ornery side and too curious for his own good. And it didn't seem fair that... He might not have even known that it was a chicken house. Had you thought of that? He might have blundered in there thinking that it was a storage shed or something. And, oh well, maybe I could save the little stoop before he got in over his head. So it was that, against my better judgment, I slipped up the little ramp runway and stuck my head inside the door. Don't worry, I had no intention of going inside. A warning, that's all he would get from me, and that was risky enough. It was dark inside. I cocked my right ear and listened. Not much there, so I switched over to smell-o-radar and... Whoa! Just about blew out the control panel. I'd forgotten about the powerful odors that gather inside a chicken house. Smell-o-radar is calibrated to pick up the tiniest of odors, don't you see? And there are no tiny odors in a chicken house. Just a lot of big ones, and if you're not careful... They can fry all the circuits in your smell-o-radar. Anyways, so far, so good. I knew Eddie was in there somewhere, but at least he hadn't started a riot. As long as that condition held, we had some hope of getting him out and saving his life. I realized that talking would be risky, but it was a risk I had to take. I whispered,
Eddie!
No answer.
Eddie!
Still, no. Holy smokes. All at once, there was this horrible masked face right in front of me. And I mean only inches away from the end of my... Okay, it was Eddie. You probably thought it was a night monster or a ghost or something. Even I was fooled there for a second, but just for a second. Not for long. Just a brief moment of time, and then the voice of reason prevailed and said,
It's only Eddie.
Of course, who else could it be? It was no big deal, no runaway. You called? Right, Eddie, I've come to save you. You don't know where you are.
Chicken house?
Well, yes, but I'm sure you don't realize what it means to be inside this particular chicken house.
What?
Chicken house, this particular chicken house.
Yeah, come in, we'll talk.
I don't think so, Eddie. See, the whole point of my being here, I squeezed through the little door, is to get you out, not to get me in. You see what I mean?
Sure, listen, got a deal. You like eggs?
I stared at his masked face and wondered if he had actually said what I thought he'd said. Are you out of your mind? Listen, bud, you're standing in the most dangerous place in Ochiltree County. I mean, a missile range is like a garden compared to this because a missile is like a flower compared to Sally Mae when she's on a rampage. I got the feeling that he wasn't listening, so I poked him in the chest and whispered louder in his ear. Do you hear what I'm saying? You haven't seen Sally Mae in one of her thermonuclear moments, so you'll have to take my word for it. When she's mad, well, listen to this. It happened that I knew a little song about this very subject, so I did it for him. Here's how it went.
When she's angry, when she's wrathful, the trees run for cover. And when she speaks of her displeasure, the mountains hide their faces. It's not that she's unreasonable. It's not that she's unkind. She can be as warm as sunlight, soft as flowers on a vine. Thank you. But if you summon up her displeasure, prepare yourself for winds and tempests, for her anger is like a blizzard, a hurricane, volcano, and tornado. She despises all injustices, inequalities, and lies. And she knows when there is wickedness just by looking in your eyes. When she's angry, when she's wrathful, the trees run for cover. And when she speaks of her displeasure, the mountains hide their faces. The mountains hide their faces.
Eddie listened to the song, but I wasn't sure that he'd gotten the point. He shrugged his shoulders. She'll never know. I stared at the outline of his masked face. It was the face of a bandit or a robber. What do you mean she'll never know? She knows everything. Knowing is her business.
Got a plan. Can't miss. Fresh eggs for both of us.
I must admit that the mention of fresh eggs caused me to, well, lick my chops, so to speak. Eddie, your plan won't work. In the first place, the hens are sitting on their eggs. Did you notice that?
Right, they're asleep.
They're asleep now, but when you reach your cold little hand into a nest, they'll go off like 32 burglar alarms. He shook his head.
Got that covered, no problem.
In the second place, used eggs leave shells behind. When Sally Mae comes to gather her morning eggs, she'll find shells. Do you suppose she'll think they're clam shells? Shotgun shells? No. She will know exactly what they are and why they happen to be shells instead of eggs.
Got that covered too. No problem.
And then you know what will happen? She'll pull out her list of prime suspects, which will contain two names, mine and mine. No thanks. Let's get out of here. I started towards the door, but Eddie caught me behind the collar and pulled me back.
You hungry?
No, I'm stuffed. Couldn't hold another. At that moment, my stomach growled, and my mouth began to water. Bite. In other words, no. Or not very. I've seen hungrier nights. Okay, maybe I'm hungry, but I'm not crazy.
This'll work. Magic.
I cut my eyes from side to side. Explain that.
Magic. Now you see it, now you don't. Now it's broken, now it's fixed. Now it's shells, now it's an egg. Bingo.
Wait a minute. Are you trying to tell me magic, huh? I'll be darned. That's one I've never tried. And you can make the shells go back together? Is that what you're saying?
Right. Easy. No problem.
Well, by George, you did okay with the dog food trick. Maybe. Eddie thrust a finger into the air.
Watch.
With that, he crept to the nearest nest, upon which a big fat hen was sitting, fast asleep. The hen was asleep, not the nest. He rubbed his little raccoon hands together, perhaps to warm them up, and slipped them beneath the sleeping hen. He lifted her out of the nest and set her down in an empty nest nearby. And I'll be darned, she never even cracked an eye. Those coons could do amazing feats with their hands. A little humor there. Get it? Feats with their hands? But no kidding aside, they really could do a lot with their hands. Well, at that point, I found my eyes drawn to the 6 or 7 fresh eggs sitting in the... Mercy, it took a lot of chop-licking to control the flow of... And my stomach was growling like crazy by this time. I mean, it had been days and days since I'd had a decent meal, and by George... You'll never guess what happened then. Even I was surprised.
Three eggs apiece is how the
treasure divided itself up, and you can't believe how good they were. Best eggs I'd ever eaten. And what made them even better was the fact that nobody would ever know. I mean, here was the perfect crime, made possible by Eddie the Rack's incredible magic skills. What a guy. What a deal. Of course, I'll have to admit that I was a little surprised when he explained my part in the deal. I was feeling very good, see? My tummy was warm and full. He had just pulled off the perfect crime of the century. I didn't have a care in the world. Then Eddie read the fine print, so to speak, and told me how his magic would put those six eggs back together. I was surprised, to say the least, and I believe my response was, "Huh? Wait a minute, hold it right there. You mean for the magic to work, I have to sit on the nest for 2 hours? Why can't you sit on it? It's your magic, after all." He waved one hand through the air.
"Right, that's the problem. See, egg magic needs a neutral diode."
"What's a neutral diode?"
"Draws electrical smithereens from the ostensible ether. Won't work with me. Too much magic current. Shells won't knit together."
I hadn't thought of that. I hadn't thought of it because it was way yonder over my head. I mean, I didn't understand any of that stuff he'd said. The guy must have been a genius. I thought it over for a moment. "So I just hop onto the nest and sit there for a couple hours, huh? That's all there is to it?"
"Yeah, then scat. She'll never suspect a thing."
"Well, I guess you know what you're doing. Speaking of which, what will you be doing while I'm dioding the electrical smithereens?"
"Close by, keeping watch, checking things."
"I see. And if I should happen to fall asleep, which I won't, but just in case I do, you'll be around to wake me up after 2 hours, right?"
"Right, no problem."
Sounds a little crazy, Eddie, but it just might be crazy enough to work. I'll give it a shot, but if those eggshells haven't gone back together after 2 hours, I'm going to vanish for a few days."
"Fine."
"I sure wouldn't want to be anywhere close by when Sally Mae discovered the crime, don't you see? 'Cause when she's mad, the trees..."
"Run for cover, I know, fine."
"It's nothing personal. I mean, I like you, Eddie, sort of. And I realize that you're probably a scientific genius, but I'm a pretty shrewd negotiator, and I don't make deals unless they're airtight."
"Yeah, you're tough."
I put a paw on his shoulder and looked him right in the eye. "A guy has to be, Eddie. As you get older and gain a little more experience, you'll realize that life is what we live. And if it weren't for life, this would be a pretty lifeless place." He yawned. "Am I boring you?"
"Oh, no. It's late."
"Yes, it is. But as I was saying..." I seem to have lost my train of thought. "I wanted you to remember something about life."
"I'll remember."
"Do that, Eddie, because it was pretty important. I like to help you younger guys every chance I get."
"Right. Thanks."
"I wish I could remember. Oh, well, better get to work on the eggshells." I hopped up into the nest and settled down upon the... Yikes, I could hear him crunching beneath the weight of my enormous body. "Eddie, are you certain this'll work? Something seems to be crunching down there."
"They do that. At first, the diodic polarity has to reverse."
"Oh, sure. I didn't think of that. Okay, pal. I've got things under control here. Check me in 2 hours." He waved and ducked out the door. "Hey, Eddie." He stuck his head back inside. "I thought I heard someone laughing."
"Oh, no. Me, coughing. Bad cough. Chill in the air."
"Well, you'd better take care of yourself. We just might want to go into the egg business." I gave him a secret wink, if you know what I mean.
"Got it."
He ducked out again, and I settled into the business of knitting the eggshells back together. I figured that if I concentrated extra hard on polarizing the diatribes, it might speed up the process. I sure wanted the process to speed up, if at all possible. I mean, 2 hours can be a long time. 2 minutes crawled by, and I thought I would go nuts. It's very hard for your active minds to adjust to the rhythms of a brainless chicken. How could they sit there on a nest for hours and days? What did they think about? Probably not much. Oh, boy, this was going to be tough. Fluff. Fluffy feathers. Going to be a tough assignment, and perhaps the hardest part would be trying to stay at Snork, Merk, Snickle Fritz. Beulah calling my name. Lovely brown eyes and flaxen pork chops. Snarkingly. Murgle skiver and had to stay awake. Awoken. Away in the clouds of feathers rushing to burble the murgle. Mompus. Womp. Ragamuffin. Turkey bork. Snork. I seem to be hearing a sound. The sound of footsteps approaching. The crunching of snow. It must be Beulah. She needed me. Beulah needed me. At last, no more bird dog. I'm coming, Beulah. I'll save you from the rioting pork chops. I opened my eyes and... Perhaps I had dozed. Yes, I'm almost sure I had. Not for long, just a short... And yet something had happened to the darkness of night. It had vanished, so to speak, and turned into the... Well, the lightness of day. It was daylight. My goodness, how could that be? Somehow, through some atmospheric condition that even I didn't understand, somehow the hours between midnight and daylight had compressed themselves and passed in just a matter of minutes while I dozed. How else could you explain it? I knew and was 100% sure that I hadn't slept more than a few minutes because, well, sleeping on the job just wasn't something we did in the security business. Yes, this was a very rare condition of the atmosphere. Happens only once or twice every 100 years when you get a layer of cold air and a layer of warm air, and I suddenly became aware of my surroundings. I blinked my eyes and gazed around. Holy cats. I was in the chicken house, sitting on a nest. Impossible. There was no way on earth that a head of ranch security would be. Oops. Okay, the events of the past several hours came tumbling back to my memory. Eddie. My good pal, Eddie. My business partner, Eddie. Eddie, the magical rack, who, it appeared, had not awakened me after 2 hours, as he had promised. So here I was, sitting on a stupid... He had left me hung out to dry, is what he'd done. And it was daylight. And it just happened that Sally Mae usually gathered her eggs at that time of day, and... Yikes! I stood up and looked down into the nest to see if the broken eggs had... My head came up very slowly. I cut my eyes from side to side. Okay, it was all coming clear now. The pieces of the puzzle had finally begun to fall into place. You remember that crazy story? That wild, stupid, unbelievable story he told me about how broken eggs will knit back together if a guy sits on the nest for 2 hours? Lies, all lies! I hadn't believed that story, not for 1 minute, not even for a second, although... Okay, maybe I believed it for a few brief seconds, just long enough to... But the bottom line was that... Actually, there were several bottom lines, all of which threatened to shorten my career. Those bottom lines were... 1. Eddie had told me a huge whopper of a lie. 2. I, being a trusting soul, had believed him. Although not totally, and not for very long. 3. I now found myself inside Sally Mae's chicken house. 4. Sally Mae's chicken house was a very dangerous place for a dog to be at sunrise. 5. 22 head of Leghorn hens were sitting on their nests, staring at me. And just waiting to go off in an explosion of feathers and squawking. Six. And worst of all, I heard someone coming. Holy smokes, my goose was cooked. The footsteps were coming closer. I knew it was Sally Mae, had to be. And suddenly I was seized by panic and terror. Cold chills ran down my backbone. My breaths came in short bursts. My heart began to pound like a bass drum. Fellers, it looked very bad, even hopeless. See, if I moved or tried to run, the chickens would go off, and just imagine how that would look to Sally Mae, me running out of a squawking hen house. But if I didn't move or try to run, she would walk in and find me sitting upon a nest full of, well, used eggs, you might say. And naturally, she would never think to pin the blame on the guilty party. Oh no, she would leap to conclusions and follow the line of superficial evidence, which sure enough led right to my front door, so to speak.
Nope.
Closer and closer. Crunch, crunch. The footsteps stopped at the door. Maybe she would... Someone was fingering the latch. My eyes focused on the knob. I froze, didn't even dare to breathe. Maybe she would... The knob turned. The door swung open. The squeaking of the hinges stabbed the silence. I tried to swallow, but my mouth had gone dry. A long shadow fell across the floor of the chicken house. It wasn't the shadow of Eddie the Rack, or Drover, or anyone else I wanted to see at that moment. It was a human shadow. It was coming inside. Well, I'd had a pretty good life. I'd always hoped it would be a little longer than this, and I really hadn't planned for it to end in a chicken house. But a guy doesn't always get to pick and choose his... A human form appeared in the doorway. I found myself staring into the eyes of little Alfred. All the air went out of my body. I almost fainted with joy. He stared at me with wide eyes, and then a grin tugged at one corner of his mouth.
Hanky, what are you doing?
Well, it did look strange, me sitting on a nest in the chicken house. It wasn't the sort of thing a guard dog, a ranch dog, would do under normal conditions. I gave him a big smile and whapped my tail. He crept over to me.
Are you trying to weigh an egg?
No, not exactly. You see, Eddie had told me there was no way I could explain it. All at once, I was overwhelmed by the feeling that I had done something really stupid. I stood up. The boy's eyes went to the, well, to the pile, to the collection of, to the accumulation, shall we say, of eggshells in the nest below me. His eyes widened. His mouth fell open. Air rushed into his lungs. He covered his mouth with a hand.
Hanky, you tried to hatch the eggs, and you broke them.
I cut my eyes from side to side. Why, yes, that's exactly what I had. What a clever lad. My goodness, with just a few clues and signs, he had by George pieced the whole thing together. Yes, sometime in the night, I had gotten this wild, crazy idea, see, and had wondered... I'd always wondered if a dog could sit on a chicken's nest and hatch the eggs. So I'd tried it. Hopped up on the nest. But darn the luck, I hadn't thought about, well, what the weight of a dog would do to a bunch of little bitty eggs, don't you see? And darn the luck, I'd broken them all. I gave him my most sincere smile and several big wags. But the important point here, and the point I tried hardest to convey and emphasize, was that this was no ordinary case of egg theft. The eggs had merely broken, is all. No kidding. Nobody had eaten them. The boy whistled under his breath.
Whew. If Mom finds out that you set on her eggs, Hanky, she's gonna be mad.
Yes, I'd thought of that, so... what could we do to, well, prevent the spread of violence and bloodshed? He cast slow glances over both shoulders.
She'll be out here pretty quick. We'd better hide the shells.
Great idea. I hadn't thought of that, but yes, anything to halt the spread of violence and bloodshed and promote peace on the ranch. I was for that 100%. I hopped out of the nest. While Alfred gathered up all the eggshells and crammed them into his pockets, I turned to the rows of hens sitting on their nests. They were watching us very carefully. Hi there, I said with a warm smile. We had a little accident over here. No big deal, nothing major, just a small mess. We'll have it cleaned up in a second and be on our way. Y'all have a good day now, here. I gave them a wink and a casual wave and backed out the door. Alfred followed and eased the door shut. He held his breath and listened. Two or three hens clucked, but that was it. I almost fainted with relief. Holy smokes, had we dodged a bullet or what? I went straight over to the boy and gave him my biggest, juiciest, most thankful lick on the cheek and ear. He laughed and pushed me away.
Quit wicking me.
Then his face grew solemn, and he shook his finger in my face.
Hanky, dogs can't make eggs hatch. Don't do that anymore.
He was right. I knew he was right. It had been silly of me to think that I could hatch out a bunch of eggs. I assured him that it would never happen again. Never, ever. And at that point, I began plotting my revenge on Eddie the Rack. He would pay for this. I headed for his cage. Huh? It was empty. Well, that fit his pattern of sneaky behavior. After luring me into his web of lies and half-truths, now he was afraid to come back and face the roses. Not a bad idea, actually. Perhaps he knew what kind of roses I had planned to give him. A big one, right on the end of his nose. I heard little Alfred coming up behind me.
Uh-oh, Eddie's gone. But look, Twack's in the snow.
I whooped, so to speak, and sure enough, there was a clear line of raccoon tracks heading off to the south in the direction of Wolf Creek.
Let's see if we can find Eddie.
Find Eddie? I wasn't so sure that that was a good idea. I mean, Alfred's mom had laws against him taking off on hikes without her permission. And this was January, a month when the weather tended to be cold and unpredictable. February, actually. On the other hand, I could see certain advantages in being somewhere else when Sally Mae came out to gather the eggs. Maybe she wouldn't find the evidence of broken eggs, but surely she would notice the, well, sudden drop in production. That could lead to hard questions and... Yes, by George, it was a nice morning for a walk. Why not? The boy was dressed for the weather, snow boots, gloves, cap, and insulated coveralls, and we would leave a clear trail in the snow. If someone really wanted to find us, they could do it without much trouble. Slim and Loper fancied themselves to be expert trackers, you know, and following our trail would give them a little exercise and something to brag about. And besides all that, Alfred didn't ask my opinion. He was already on the trail, and I had to run to catch up with him. We hiked down the hill behind the house and past the gas tanks. Drover was there, and would you like to guess what he was doing? Pushing up a long line of Z's. Sleeping his life away. Homesteading his gunny sack. I called to him as we walked past. Wake up, half-stepper! Arise and sing! We're on our way to conquer new worlds, and you're about to miss the bus. He jumped straight up and staggered around in crazy circles. His eyes were crooked. His ears were crooked. Heck, I think even his nose was crooked. Those were all sure and clear signs that the little mutt was still half asleep. He staggered out to join us.
Oh my gosh, did you see that bus?
Bus? No, I didn't see a bus.
Well, I did, saw it with my own eyes.
That's odd.
Not really. I've never used anybody else's.
Anybody else's what?
Eyes. I always use my own.
Yes, of course. So do I.
You saw it too?
I didn't say that, Drover, and stop leaping to conclusions. Let's take this thing one step at a time.
Yeah, 'cause one step always comes before the next one.
Exactly. A bus on this ranch? Somehow that doesn't add up.
Yeah, and I never was any good with numbers, but I've got good eyes and they saw it.
Strange. Maybe you'd better give me a description.
Well, let's see. Big. It was big. Real big.
Got it. Go on. How about wheels? Did it have wheels?
Oh, yeah, lots of wheels.
Numbers, Drover. We need numbers.
Okay. 37, 13, 68, and 4.
I stared at him. The number of wheels on the bus.
Oh, I thought you just wanted some numbers.
No, the number of wheels.
8.
Yes, but it was cornbread, and I almost choked, so it doesn't count. But the eggs were delicious, thanks.
You're welcome.
At that point, we reached the north bank of Wolf Creek, and here we had to suspend my interrogation. Why? Because we had to cross the creek. Hang on while we cross the creek. Little Alfred, who was serving as the official tracker on this expedition, led us across the creek. Drover and I followed. I waded through the water. Drover hopped across because, well, he doesn't like water. He reminded me of a grasshopper, the way he hopped around. On the south bank, I returned to the interrogation. Let's see, where were we?
Counting cornbread, I think.
No. I said that the cornbread didn't count.
Yeah, arithmetic is tough.
Speaking of ticks, I haven't seen any lately.
No, it's winter.
Exactly. We walked along in silence. Nice day.
Yeah, it's starting to snow again.
That's true, which explains why all these snowflakes are falling from the sky. Another long silence. Drover, I have a feeling that something has happened to this conversation.
I wonder what it could be.
I'm not sure. I just have this feeling. Okay, I've got it. We were doing a workup on the bus. I waited for him to pick it up from there. You do remember the bus, don't you?
Well, not really. What bus?
The bus, Drover. The bus that came through the ranch just a short while ago.
I'll be darned. What did it look like?
Well, let's see. It had 8 wheels, as I recall, and it was big, a huge bus, red, bright red.
I'll be darned. Was anyone on it?
Well, let's see here. That's an obvious question. Funny how you don't notice those details in the midst of a driver. There must have been a driver, Drover.
Hello?
What?
Someone called my name.
I stuck my nose in the runt's face and gave him some fangs to look at. I called your name. Is it possible that your mind had wandered, that you weren't listening to my description of the... Wait a minute. Why am I describing the bus?
Well, I don't know.
You're the one who saw the stupid bus, so you ought to be the one describing it.
I'll be darned.
We came to a halt. I stared into the great emptiness of his eyes. You did see a bus, didn't you?
Well, I don't think so. What would a bus be doing out here on the ranch?
Drover, sometimes I couldn't find the words to express the scrambled feeling in my head, so I started walking again. I caught up with little Alfred. I threw myself into the task of following the trail. I had to do something to clear the fog out of my brain. Here he came, padding along and snapping at an occasional snowflake.
What are you doing, Hank?
I'm working, Drover, doing my job, following tracks.
Oh, good.
He stared down at the trail.
Are those bus tracks?
My head shot up, and I fixed him with a gaze of coldest steel. Okay, that's it. That's all I can stand. Drover, I have no choice but to put you on report for the rest of the day. You get 3 shame on yous, and I forbid you ever to say the word bus again. He hung his head.
Gosh, what if I see one? What will I call it?
Call it a sub. That's bus backwards.
What if I see a sub?
Call it a tub.
That doesn't make much sense.
No, and neither do you, so hush. We continued along in silence for a full 10 seconds. Then he said,
They don't look like sub tracks to me.
Hush! At last, he hushed, and I was able to concentrate. I mean, after trying to carry on an intelligent conversation with Drover, I had just about lost all my bearings and marbles. Talk to Drover sometime and see if you don't lose your marbles. He's a very strange dog. And I mean very strange. Where was I? I didn't know where I was. Standing at a bus stop, waiting for a submarine, counting cornbread, tracking a washtub. I didn't know what was going on. Boy. At last, I returned to my senses and began to realize that little Alfred had led us quite a distance from the house. Not only had we crossed Wolf Creek, but we had crossed a barbed wire fence and were now in Parnell's bull pasture, just east of the dark, enchanted forest. I began to feel uneasy about this. In the first place, Alfred hadn't told his ma where he was going. In the second place, a bull pasture was not my favorite place to be. It contained bulls, don't you see? And in the third place, if this snow kept up, it would cover our tracks. And if anything bad happened, well, you know me. I began to worry. Remember, I'm in charge of kids. Years ago, I took the solemn cowdog oath, which included the part,
We'll protect and defend all little children against snakes, monsters, and crawling things.
You know what? I've been known to goof off at times, but on this matter of protecting the kids, hey, there are no days off, no foolishness, no compromise. I was in charge of Alfred's safety, and I was getting a little uneasy. I let him know what I was thinking, but he didn't listen.
Just a little more, Hanky. See where the twacks go?
My eyes followed the line of Eddie's footprints. They went straight to, an old abandoned house. The windows were boarded up. The front door hung open, and the roof above the porch was about to fall down. It looked pretty creepy, to tell you the truth, and what was that? I heard a sound, something banging in the wind. Yes, there it was again, same sound. Alfred's eyes were pretty wide by this time.
Do you reckon it's a haunted house, Hanky?
I tried to ignore the cold chills that began skating down my backbone and went all the way out to the end of my tail. Haunted house? Well, I sure didn't know about that, and I sure didn't want to know about it either. It seemed to me that this would be a very good time to head back to the ranch. I mean, with the snow and everything. Alfred began creeping towards the porch. Well, the boy had nerve. I had to give him that. And since I was in charge of kids, I couldn't just stand there and let him... Have we discussed haunted houses? I don't like them. Never have. Your average haunted house looks creepy and sounds creepy. But the creepiest part of all is that most haunted houses are haunted. And we're talking about ghosts and skeletons and bats. I've got no use for a bat. And spiders and witches and pirates, Egyptian mummies, frankincense monsters, and all kinds of discombobulated spirits. Is that any place for a normal, healthy dog? No, sir. Show me a haunted house, fellers, and I'll show you the way home. Only little Alfred seemed determined to go inside, and I kind of wished he wouldn't. He began creeping towards the front porch. What can I do but creep along behind him? But then, all of a sudden, and out of nowhere, I heard this strange whispering voice. Holy smokes! The hair on my back stood straight up, and I whirled around to face. Okay, false alarm. I had more or less forgotten. Drover, how many times have I told you not to creep up behind me when I'm creeping up on a house?
I don't know.
Well, I don't either, but don't do it. You give me the creeps.
Yeah, I've got them too, and I don't like them. Hank!
What?
This old leg of mine is starting to hurt, and you know what? I don't like the looks of that house.
That's fine, Drover. If that house could talk, it would probably say that it doesn't like your looks either. Everything works out for the best.
I don't want to go in there.
Great. Stand out here and wait for that bus you were talking about.
All by myself? Hank, I'm scared. Are you?
Scared? Not at all. You see, Drover?
Yikes!
What was that strange screeching sound? All at once, I forgot Drover and his foolish fears and whirled around to face the attack of... Actually, it was just the sound of little Alfred opening the door. It had squeaky hinges, don't you see? Very squeaky hinges. Hinges that didn't sound like hinges at all. They sounded more like, I don't know, the screech of an Egyptian mummy or something like that. And I'll admit that my nerves were just a bit on edge, mainly because of Drover. The little mutt had a childish fear of old houses. Thought they were haunted or something. How silly. Anyways, Alfred had pulled open the door, and now he stuck his head inside. For Drover's sake, I hoped that the boy would take one look around and decide that we could probably spend our time better somewhere else. I was worried about Drover. Maybe I already said that. He stuck his head inside the door. Little Alfred did, not Drover. Drover was standing behind me, shivering and moaning. I could hear his teeth clacking. Alfred looked inside, then his head emerged.
I don't see Eddie. It's too dark and spooky.
Well, that just about wrapped it up, didn't it? I mean, when it's too dark to see, it's time to go, right? I turned myself around and pointed like a compass needle in the direction of... That was odd. The boy wrapped his arm around my chest and picked me up off the ground and... Huh? Started stuffing me into the door that led into that house full of monsters? Hey, wait a minute. We needed to talk this thing out, make some plans. I mean, it was awfully dark in there and... I wouldn't have supposed that Alfred was stout enough to do that, but he did. And there I was, standing on the brink of the edge of the terrible black darkness and...
Don't.
Alfred spoke to me in a whisper.
You go first, Hanky, and check it out for monsters, 'cause you're big and tough.
Yeah, you bet. That was me, all right, big and tough, and my mouth sure was dry. And the insides of my legs sure were wet. Snow melt, no doubt.
Don't.
Well, there was nothing for me to do but to mush on and hope for the best. After a minute or two, my eyes began to adjust to the darkness. I looked around. There was an old table, a wood-burning stove, a broken chair, several mason jars, a pack rat's nest, and a layer of dust on everything. But no Eddie. Now that I could see, I felt somewhat bolder. I took a deep breath and a step forward. Nothing happened, so I took another step. Hey, this was going to be a piece of cake. I couldn't help chuckling at Drover's childish and irrational fear of old houses. What was an old house but a house that had gotten old? I decided to call. I cleared my throat. Eddie? Eddie the raccoon? A rescue party has just arrived to take you back to the ranch. No answer. I called again and listened. Aha! I heard the little snipe, or at least the scraping of his claws on the floor upstairs. He didn't want to go back home. That was the deal. Well, too bad for him and what he wanted. We'd hiked all the way over here, crossed rivers and climbed snowy mountains to find him, and by George, we weren't going back without him. I spotted the old stairs near the east wall. I was feeling pretty sure of myself by now and started up the stairs, even though they did make a pretty scary groaning noise, and I began to notice that the higher I climbed, the darker it got. Yes, the loft area turned out to be quite a bit darker than the downstairs. I reached the top stop and stepped. I reached the stop, step, and top. I reached the top step and stopped. I stopped and cocked my ear and listened. Yes, there it was again, a faint scratching sound. Eddie, come out. We know you're there. We've come to take you home. Can you hear me? Then at last, I heard his voice.
Yeah, over here.
Fine. We've come to take you home. I'll tell you in all honesty that it wasn't my idea. This is little Alfred's business. If it were up to me, I'd leave you here, you backstabbing, two-timing, con-jobbing little fraud. Did you actually think I was dumb enough to think those eggshells would go back together?
You never know.
Well, I was. You know why? Because I was also dumb enough to trust a coon.
Yeah, never trust a coon. I could have told you.
Then why didn't you?
I'm a rat, dirty rat. They ought to lock me up.
I shook my head in disbelief. Hey, Eddie, we've been through all this before. You were locked up. You were safe behind bars, just where you ought to be. But then you couldn't wait to get out.
Yeah, I know. Moonlight madness. What a rat.
What a rat is right. Well, come on, and we'll rush you back to your cell.
Can't.
What do you mean, can't?
Two ghosts, right over there.
Huh? Eddie, I think we had a little static on the line. There for a second, I thought you said...
Two ghosts?
Right. But you didn't really say that, did you? An answer of no or false will be just fine. Either one, just go ahead and say no.
Yes, two ghosts. I'm scared to come out.
I must have had my back down the stairs circuit switched over to automatic because I found myself backing down the stairs. Quietly, but with some haste. Oh, really? Ghosts, huh? What do they look like?
Black robes with hoods, phantoms, grim reapers, hangmen, electronic eyes that blink. Help!
Yes, sir, those were ghosts, all right, and it's sure been nice knowing you, pal. If you ever make it back to the ranch, give us a holler.
Help! Help!
Gee whiz, I sure hated to run out on the little guy. Even though he'd pulled several low-down dirty tricks on me, he deserved better than this. I mean, what a terrible fate to be a young orphan coon left alone in a house full of black-hooded... whatever they were's. Hangmans. Black-hooded hangmans. Yes, I felt pretty bad backing down those stairs and knowing that I was fixing to shoot through that open door and go streaking back to the ranch. On the other hand, Eddie had walked into this mess on his own four legs, and it appeared that he would have to get himself out the same way. The important thing is, not that I did nothing to help him, but that I felt pretty bad about doing nothing. Remember, it's the thought that counts. When I reached the bottom of the stairs, I discovered that Alfred and Drover had come inside. There they were, waiting for me in the darkness and dustiness of the dark, dusty living room, or what used to be the living room. The boy's eyes were big and round.
What is it, Hanky? Did you find Eddie the Whack?
Through tail wags and facial expressions and other communication media, I delivered my report to the boy and to the saucer-eyed Drover, who was cowering between Alfred's legs. Okay, guys, I've got good news and bad news. The good news is that Eddie's up there in the loft, and as far as I can determine, he's all right, just too scared to come out. Drover's eyes were about to bug out of his head. He'd been hanging on every word.
How come he's scared to come out?
Good question, Drover. And that takes us right into the bad news. The bad news is that there are two black hooded hangmans up there in the loft with him. I heard them both gasp. Do we have any volunteers to go up there and rescue our friend Eddie? Silence, except for Drover's chattering teeth. That's what I thought. In that case, I suggest we... Suddenly, we heard a loud crash. And then, a long, throbbing silence. I glanced at Alfred. He glanced at Drover, and Drover stared at me with two full moons for eyes. I coughed. Guys, we've covered the good news and the bad news. Now to the real bad news. The door has just blown shut, and we may be trapped in here with whatever that is up in the loft. A restless wind moaned through the rafters of the old house. A piece of loose tin banged on the roof. Three nervous hearts banged away in their respective bodies. Yikes. I shouldn't have used that word, bodies. It sounds too scary, and this deal has gotten about as scary as it needs to be, without any talk about... Well, you know. Let's back up. Our three hearts were beating, yes, but they had nothing whatsoever to do with bodies or skeletons or ghosts or anything like that. They were just beating. That's what hearts are supposed to do, right? Yes, ours were whamming around in our chests, not bodies, in our chests. Okay, we were scared. Even I was scared. Who wouldn't be scared? The door had just slammed shut, the windows were all boarded up, and... Drover was the first to break into sheer panic. He started jumping around and running in circles. Oh my gosh, Hank, help, murder, mayday, my leg. Little Alfred had been a brave little explorer up to now, but when Drover fell apart, the boy's lower lip pooched outward and downward and began to quiver.
I want my mommy, and I want to go home.
I tried to think. My mind was racing. Alfred, try the door. See if you can open it. He didn't move. He appeared to be frozen.
I want my mommy.
Hey, everybody wants your mommy, but you're the only one of us who can open that door. Alfred, open the dad-blasted door. A tear slid down his cheek, and my goodness, his lower lip was pooched out about 6 inches.
I'm scared of hangmans, and I don't like this place. And I want my mommy.
Well, we'd lost him. He was useless. And Drover, you talk about useless. After squeaking and running in circles, he found an old feed sack in the corner and tried to hide under it. That's right. Nosed his way under it so that all you could see of him was his hiney and stub tail sticking up in the air. The little goof. That left me to hold our little group together. And yes, to find some way out of this dangerous turn of events. I had to come up with a plan. Real quick. Eddie? Eddie, can you hear me? Silence. Then I heard this reply, made in a loud, raspy, hacksaw voice. I can hear you, but I ain't Eddie. Upon hearing the strange voice, I was almost overcome by a sudden urge to... Well, run through the wall, which I tried to do, and which didn't work. The voice from above spoke again. What was that loud crash? What's going on down there, and who are you? I scraped myself up off the floor, straightened my nose, and shook the stars out of my head. I can't tell you what my name is until I find out who you are. Huh! Too bad for you, 'cause I ain't talking. All right, then tell me this. Are you one of the black hooded hangmans? I heard whispering. Then Yes, we are black-hooted hangmans, we surely are, and we're fixing to start hooting and hang you from the nearest tree if you don't scram out of here and leave us alone, is what we're fixing to do. Are you that little bitty ghost with the mask over his eyes? Why, yes, of course. Yes, that's me. How did you know? Well, we know because we seen you creeping around up here in the dark is how we know. And I can tell you right now that we ain't scared of you, not even a little bit. Fine, because I'm not scared of you either. That was a small lie. A big lie, actually, but I had to say something. Well, you aren't to be scared of us. We're tough, we're mean, and we're dangerous, ain't we, son? It was then that I heard the voice of the second black-hooded hangman.
We're terrible and mean.
There, you see? That's my boy. He's 8 foot tall, weighs 435 pounds, and looks like a gorilla. He eats trees and horses and big rocks, and he ain't scared of you not one bit, are you, son?
Well...
See? I told you. And if you don't go away and leave us alone, I'm just liable to send my boy down there to whip you.
Now, wait just a second.
See? I've got this boy on a chain, a big old heavy log chain. And he's up here just a-lunging against that chain, cause he ain't had a bloody fight in 2 whole days, and he's just a-burning up to start a fight with somebody.
Pa, I wish you wouldn't say things like that.
Hush up. Tell him how big you are.
I'm real big.
Now tell him how mean you are.
And I'm real mean.
Good. Now tell him how bad you want to go down there and whip the stuffings out of him.
Okay. And Pa says your mama eats boogers.
Dead silence. Son, I did not say that. Now that ghost is liable to come up here, and you ought to be ashamed of yourself for spreading trash and lies about your own daddy, your very own flesh and blood, and you just... Mr. Ghost, I did not say that terrible thing about your dear old mother.
He did too. And he said she wears dirty socks too.
Junior, shame on you for... Son, you're fixing to get your poor old daddy thrashed is what's fixing to happen.
By this time, I had pretty muchly solved the mystery of the black-hooded hangman's in the loft. And this is really going to surprise you. You'll never guess who those guys were. See, Eddie the Rack had caught a glimpse of them in the darkness and had reported that they were black-hooded hangmans. That had thrown me off the track just for a few minutes, but not for long. See, once I heard them talking, I ran a voice scan through data control, and when the report came back, it said... Hang on, you'll never believe this. The report said that we had a couple of buzzards up there. And we even had their names, Wallace and Junior. Are you shocked? Surprised? Not me. I suspected all along that... Okay, I was a little surprised too. Anyways, this was a good turn of events. I was feeling a whole lot better about the future, for while two buzzards can make noise and talk a lot of trash, they're fairly harmless birds. Okay, guys, it's time for show and tell. I can now reveal that I know your names. Not only your names, but who you are and what you do for a living. Shall I continue? In the gloom, I could barely see Junior's head peek over the loft.
Mr. Ghost, Mr. Pa, I can see him now, and he ain't a ghost.
What do you mean he ain't a ghost?
I mean he ain't a ghost, because he's a dog.
A dog? Son, I talked to that ghost myself, and I know for a fact that he ain't a dog.
Is too a dog.
Is not a dog.
Is too a dog. Just look for yourself.
He gave me a shy smile, and waved the tip of his wing.
Hi there, doggy.
How's it going, Junior?
Oh, well, we came here because of the snowstorm, and we thought we saw a ghost.
Wallace's ugly bald head came into view. Son, that is a ghost in a dog suit is what that is, and we are still in serious trouble.
No, he's our doggy friend.
Our... Wallace craned his neck and squinted his eyes at me. I gave him a little wave. He snapped his head around to Junior. Then he snapped it around to me. Then he puffed himself up and yelled, Son, that there is a dog! By this time, little Alfred could see the two buzzards up in the choir loft. The tears stopped flowing down his cheeks, and he even managed to smile.
Why, it's buzzards, Hanky. Two big old buzzards.
That's right, son. And I hope you'll remember who unhaunted the haunted house and unhooded the hooded hangmans. I'm not one to brag and boast, but, well, you know your ma and how she gets mad at me, and everyone needs a friend, if you know what I mean. He nodded and grinned. But then a shadow passed over his face.
Hanky, I miss my mommy. Let's get Eddie and go home.
Good idea. Hey, Eddie, come on out and let's go home. Hurry up before the snow gets too deep. Wallace glared down at me. Who's Eddie? We've got no Eddies up here, just me and Junior, so there's no call for you to be yelling about. Just then, Eddie came monkey walking into view. Wallace stared at him for a moment. His eyes popped open, and so did his beak. He jumped backwards and flapped his wings. Yeah! Go on, get out! Junior, what is that thing that just come walking out of the darkness and... Son, it's that ghost with the mask in... Yeah, ghost, yeah! Pretty exciting, huh? And you probably think the scary part is over, right? Not quite. Just wait and see what happened when we left the haunted house. The old man took cover behind Junior.
Oh, Pa, don't act so silly. He's only a little cocoon.
A cocoon? Son, butterflies come from cocoons, and that's no butterfly. He ain't near small enough, and... Why, Junior, that is a raccoon. A cute little old raccoon.
I told you so.
And we haven't eaten a good wholesome meal in 3 days, Junior, and... Wallace came waddling out into the open. He wore a crazy grin and was rubbing his wings together. He spoke to me. Say there, neighbor, I don't reckon y'all might consider trade for that little old raccoon, would you? We'd have to take him on credit, of course. Nope, I'm afraid you guys will have to stick with dead skunks and smashed rabbits on the road. Well, don't you think we can't, Mr. Smarty Pants? We've been a-doing just fine without friends like you, and since you're gonna be so stingy, maybe y'all better just leave our house right this very minute. Junior, tell them to get out of our house. Junior shook his head.
Pa, please, hush.
Wallace gave him an angry glare. Junior, did you just tell me to hush?
Yeah.
All right, fine, I'll hush, but you'll be sorry. And with that, old man Wallace crossed his wings over his chest and turned his back on us and pouted. Eddie the Rack hurried down the stairs, casting puzzled glances back at Wallace. He went straight to little Alfred and crawled into his arms. As he passed me, I heard him say,
Weird guy, take me home, lock me up, no more roaming for me.
Well, we had just about completed our mission, and it was time to head back to the house. Eddie crawled up on the back of Alfred's neck, and I called to Mr. Hide under the sack. Alfred struggled with the door until he got it open. We were greeted by the cold north wind and a dusting of snow. Well, Junior, it was fun. And of course, It's always a pleasure to spend a few hours with your old man. His face burst into a huge grin. Wallace squawked some kind of tacky reply, but I didn't stick around to hear it. I had better things to do than stand around and listen to the complaints of a gripey old buzzard. I'd heard enough already to last me several months. What a grouch. I caught up with the other guys and took my position at the front of the line. We needed me out front in the scout position, don't you see? Because it was snowing pretty hard and our trail back to the house had been covered up. In that kind of situation, we needed our best tracker and trailblazer out front. And that was, well, me, you might say. We spread out in a line and marched through the snow. Me out front, little Alfred and Eddie in the middle, and little Mr. Scaredy Cat bringing up the rear. We were the conquering explorers. We had braved the storm, unhaunted the haunted house, and rescued Eddie from a couple of hunger-crazed buzzards. And around here, we call that a pretty good day of ranch work. Yes, sir, we had become famous heroes. And when famous heroes return home from an important mission, they don't just walk or slouch along. They march. And we're talking about picking up their feet and marching in step. Hensley, I passed along the order for the entire column to stay in line, pick up their feet, and march in step. Yes, we looked pretty snappy marching through the snow. And at that point, I figured we needed to sing the famous hero's battle marching song. Do you know it? Maybe not, if you've never been a famous hero, but here's how it went.
We are famous heroes, y'all.
We are famous heroes, y'all.
We are proud and we stand tall.
We are proud and we stand tall.
Haunted houses scare us not.
Haunted houses scare us not.
Hush your mouth and thanks a lot.
Hush your mouth and thanks a lot.
Sound off
famous.
Sound off
heroes. Famous heroes. 1, 2.
1, 2.
3, 4.
Left. 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 Right. Left. Left. Left, left, right, left. We left the ranch in the snow.
You're right.
The girls all cried when we left.
You're right.
We hiked all over the universe and we're just out of sight.
You're right.
Found off
famous.
Sound off
heroes. Famous heroes. 1, 2, 1, 2.
3, 4.
My mommy's my favorite gal.
You're right.
I know she's gonna be proud.
You're right.
She'll be my friend through thick and thin. We always will be tight.
You're right.
Sound off
famous.
Sound off
heroes. Famous heroes. 1, 2, 1, 2.
3, 4.
This hero's life is new.
You're right.
It's something I rarely do.
You're right.
And my best friend's a gunny sack. It keeps me warm at night.
You're right.
Sound off
famous.
Sound off
heroes. Famous heroes. 1, 2, 1, 2.
3, 4.
Hardly know what to say.
You're right.
I usually sleep in the day.
You're right.
I'm just a slug till midnight comes, and then I go wild at night.
You're right.
Sound off
famous.
Sound off
heroes. Famous heroes. 1, 2, 1, 2.
3, 4.
Well, as you can see, it was one of the best marching songs we'd ever come up with on the ranch. Just right for a bunch of famous heroes going home from a huge success on the field of battle. Yes, if Beulah had been there, no doubt she would have fallen madly in love with me and forgotten all about her stupid, stick-tailed, spotted, dumb bunny bird dog friend, Plato. What she saw in that guy, I just didn't know, but... Oh, well. Too bad she wasn't there to see me in my moment of greatest...
Hank, what's that over there?
It was Drover. He tore me away from delicious thoughts of my one and only true love, and brought me back to the present moment, marching through the snow with my comrades. What?
I thought I saw something up ahead.
I halted the column and went back to the rear. You thought you saw something up ahead? Well, you probably did, Drover, because there are many things up ahead, such as trees, rocks, shrubs, and snowflakes.
No, it was something big with four legs.
I'm sorry, Drover, but that's impossible. You see, I am in the scout position. I am in that position because of my superior... Drover, something's happened to your eyes. All at once, they look like two fried eggs. His mouth moved, but no words came out. And just then, I heard little Alfred say,
"Uh-oh, trouble up ahead."
I whirled around and, huh? A bull? The neighbor's Jersey bull? Okay, let's pause here to pull a few loose threads together, as they say. See, I had been very busy directing the guys, the members of the Famous Heroes Symphonic Chorus, don't you see? And perhaps my attention had also drifted into thoughts of, well, Miss Beulah, and I had more or less forgotten that we were marching across Parnell's bull pasture. And what would you expect to find in a bull pasture but a, well, a bull? No big deal. Okay, maybe it was a bigger deal than you might have supposed, because it was a big bull. Real big bull. Monster bull. And have we discussed Jersey bulls? They're famous for their nasty disposition. They love to fight and attack helpless creatures such as your cow dogs, your little boys, and your raccoons. Yipes. What lousy luck. We'd almost made it to the fence between Parnell's and our home pasture. I mean, we could see it up ahead, not more than 20 yards away. The only trouble was that the bull stood between us and the fence. And fellers, he appeared to be loading up for an attack. He bellered and shook his horns, lowered his head, and began throwing snow up over his shoulder. Any one of those symptoms would have been serious. All three of them together spelled T-R-O-U-B-L-E. Drover began to squeak.
Oh my gosh, Hank, what are we gonna do?
I don't know what we're gonna do, Drover, if you must know the truth.
Oh my gosh, this leg's killing me. I knew I should have stayed home.
Well, go stick your head under a sack.
I don't have a sack.
Go buy one.
I'm broke.
Then maybe you could dry up and let me think. Just then, as if things weren't bad enough, we heard the voice of an angry ranch wife. All eyes shifted to the north. And yes, standing on the other side of the fence with both hands parked on her waist was Sally Mae. This presented us with a thorny problem. Which was the more dangerous? An angry Sally Mae or an angry bull? It was just about a toss-up, seemed to me.
Alfred Leroy, where on earth have you been? I've been worried sick about you. I had to call Viola to come over and watch Molly while I tramped around in the snow for 30 minutes. And young man, someone's been in my chicken house.
I turned to the boy. Let's see. According to that verse you sang, she's your favorite pal, right?
Except when I'm naughty.
At that point, Sally Mae stepped over the barbed wire fence and came towards us in a style of walking that I had seen many times before. Short steps, fists clenched, and arms pumping at her sides. I must admit that I hadn't expected her to cross the fence. I mean, the bull was standing right there in plain sight, but she showed no more fear of that bull than if he'd been a hummingbird, which he wasn't. She stalked right up to the bull, kicked him on the leg with her snow boot, and said,
"Scat, you nasty thing! Shoo! Hike!"
And then she breezed past him and zeroed in on us with a pair of eyes that seemed to be on fire. The bull's head shot up, and he stared at her in disbelief. But then he went back to pawing up snow and snorting arrows of steam out of his nostrils. Unless I was badly mistaken, he was taking aim at someone's mommy. She marched up to us and stopped. In the glare of her eyes,
We wilted like so many lettuce leaves on the 4th of July. I mean, she had a talent for making famous heroes look and feel like, I don't know what, famous worms.
Alfred, where on earth have you been? What on earth have you been doing? Child, can't you see that we're having a snowstorm? I just don't. How can you? Sometimes I...
Alfred cut her off.
Hey, Mom, I think that bull's fixing to come after us.
She whirled around and turned the laser look on Mr. Bull.
You silly bull, go home, scat!
For several throbbing seconds, they glared into each other's burning eyeballs. At that point, the bull rumbled and took a step toward us. And it was then that Sally Mae realized the true dangerousness of our situation. Slowly, she knelt down on one knee. Her right hand reached out and pulled little Alfred to her. Her left hand reached out and found my collar. My goodness, she dragged me out from behind. Okay, I had more or less stationed myself behind her. I mean, that seemed a good safe place to be. Not that I was afraid of the alleged bull, you understand, but it just seemed a good place to be, that's all. And I'll admit that I went to full air brakes and locked down all four legs, but you might say that didn't work and my paws dug little trenches in the snow. She hauled me out into the open, is what she did. And then she spoke to me in a voice that was soft, but very firm. And while she spoke, she never took her eyes off the bull.
Hank, my child is in danger. Help me now, and I'll forgive all your many sins.
Sins? Me? Now wait, just... All right, maybe I'd run up a small tab in the sins department. Not many, just a few, such as... Okay, eating eggs in her chicken house, and you know, little Alfred still had those broken shells in his coat pocket, and no doubt she would... I swung my gaze around to the bull and became spaghetti. That was a huge bull, and she wanted me to go out and... The moment of truth had arrived. She was waiting for my answer. The bull was waiting to see which one of us he would tear to shreds.
Go.
You know what made up my mind? It was Sally Mae herself. I mean, here was your average ranch wife who weighed, what, 125 pounds? And that bull probably weighed a ton. But her first thought was to protect her child, not to save herself. Fellers, I admired that. It was the sort of thing a cow dog would do, or hope to do. Heroes come in many shapes and sizes, right? Well, this little ranch mom was handling herself the way heroes are supposed to. By George, she was an inspiration to me, and all at once I didn't care how many times she had screeched at me and accused me of terrible crimes and told me that I stunk. Me go out and fight a bull for Sally Mae? You bet. For that courageous mom, I would put it all on the line. And if things didn't turn out well and I got made into cottage cheese, so be it. That's what cow dogs do. That's why we're a little bit special. I stood up. Our eyes met. She knew. I knew. She patted me on the head. I gave her a lick on the ear. She didn't want that, but she got it anyway. I mean, sometimes a guy can hold back his emotions, and sometimes he can't. And when he's fixing to go into battle, why bother to hold it back?
Good luck, Hank.
I marched forward. The snow crunched beneath my feet. I could hear the bull's breath roaring in his chest. Drover's teeth chattering. Little Alfred whisper,
"Go get him, Hanky. Beat the snot out of him."
And I even heard the famous hero's battle marching song. We are famous heroes, y'all. Sally Mae and I stand tall. TNT and dynamite. Look out, Bull, here comes a fight.
I stiffened my tail, raised all hackles, and went into stealthy crouch mode. The Bull answered by shaking his horns. And then he bellowed again. It was so loud I could almost feel his voice on my face. I kept moving, closer and closer. 15 yards, 10 yards, 5. I stopped, took a deep breath, and threw a glance back over my shoulder. My friends were huddled in the snow, waiting for me to engage the enemy. I turned back to the Bull, and my goodness, he was so big and ugly. My knees were trembling and I felt my courage slipping away. I switched over to friendly wags and tried to smile. Hi there, Mr. Bull. Nice weather, huh? I mean, if you like snow. Some like snow and some don't, I suppose. And how do you feel about, well, peace treaties and so forth? It seems to me that... He was on me before I knew it. Just as though he had been shot out of a cannon. Zoom, wham! He loaded me up on his horns, gave his head a toss, and threw me high into the air. Well, that answered most of my questions, and all at once things became pretty simple. When I hit the ground, he was there waiting for me, and he started working me over with those horns. Okay, if that's the way he wanted it, by George, I had a couple of tricks saved back. When he made his next pass at me, I put the old Australian fang lock on his nose. And he didn't like that, not even a little bit. He bucked. He snorted. He pawed the ground. He bellowed and bawled in rage. He tossed his head. And since I was more or less attached to his nose, I went along for the ride. Boy, what a ride. Up and down, around and around. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw a little white comet streaking off to the north. Drove her, no doubt. Then Sally Mae leaped to her feet, snatched up little Alfred in her arms, and made a run for the fence. The G-forces were pressing against my body. My jaws were getting tired. I couldn't hold on much longer. I waited, watched, held my breath. Hurry, hurry! They made it over the fence. They were safe. And at that point, I decided it was time to punch in the eject and bail out procedure. It was pretty simple. I slacked off on the jaw pressure, and suddenly I was being airmailed towards the fence. At that point, all I had to do was drop landing gear, and my landing gear happened to be pointed in the wrong direction since I was flying upside down, and the landing turned out to be a little rough. But the snow softened the blow, and I was able to leap to my feet and scramble under the fence, one step ahead of the Jersey Express. We were both panting for air. We glared at each other across the fence. You're just lucky there's a fence between us, pal, or I might... He bellowed, and I, went to escape speed and streaked back to the house. It was all over, except for the post-war celebrations. A huge crowd was waiting for me when I glided into headquarters. Drover, Alfred, Eddie the Rack, Sally Mae, Pete the Barn Cat, even J.T. Cluck, the head rooster. Oh, yes, and Miss Viola had come out with baby Molly. Huge crowd, brass band, adoring masses, smiles, flowers, cheers, blown kisses from the women folk. That's what greeted me when I marched up to the yard gate. Sally Mae, you won't believe this, I didn't believe it either. Sally Mae gave me a huge embrace. Heck, she even pressed her cheek against my left ear. With her other arm, she gathered in little Alfred and hugged him too, and she stared at the pocket of his coat from whence the crunching sound had come. Oops. She plunged her hand into the pocket and came out with a handful of eggshells, you might say. Alfred and I exchanged worried looks. Thoughts of the firing squad flashed across my mind. I began rehearsing my story. Well, you see, Sally Mae, there was this... But you know what? She smiled. Nay, she laughed. And she turned to me and said,
"You scamps, I don't even want to know what happened. Just don't do it again."
"Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am, not me, never again. I was a new dog, a reformed dog. I had taken the pledge." And would you believe that to this very day, I have notched up a perfect record and haven't done one naughty thing? Can you believe that? Neither can I, but I'm working on it. Honest. Case closed.